Welcome back, and we are back with three more candidates for school district seat B. They are Star Marcet, Mark Grober, and Richard Foster, and we'll start with Star Marcet. You have a minute for an opening statement, please, and then we'll get to questions.
Okay, thank you. My name is Star Marcet, and I'm a school board candidate for seat B. I am kind of entering this education process for the second time. I'm raising my special needs grandson, who attends Mount Eliamna Elementary School for Special Needs Children. What I've done is, in the past 4 years, I actually quit my full-time job, which was in the financial industry for 16-plus years, to become more involved in his educational process, and I also started substitute teaching about 3 years ago. What I found in the classroom, and not just with our special needs children, is that our teachers are being challenged with not being able to teach, but to manage the classroom. With the increase of autism, ADD, ADHD, and other challenging behaviors in our schools, it's not allowing them to teach, and we need to provide the resources for these students to be successful and for the students that are ready to learn to be successful.
Thank you. Lynn Anderson, first question.
Well, let's make it simple.
Okay.
Would you turn down any federal education money if it came our
way? No,
while?
I certainly wouldn't.
There have been risks described.
Well, and I know that Governor Palin has said that there were strings attached. I did listen to the legislative say that they've looked through that. They're not finding the strings that she has talked about. However, I think at this time with our economic economy that's going on, those funds, whether we continue the programs or not, can be put to good use over the time that we have them.
Okay, thank you very much. Are we teaching too much to satisfy the No Child Left Behind mandate and not enough for other educational needs?
Yes. I believe, and I will tell you that I've talked to a lot of teachers who do not feel that No Child Left Behind works. What happens is they end up leaving their curriculum that they're teaching students on a day-to-day basis and preparing these students too much in advance, and they're teaching them the tests so that they'll be successful. So they're not getting their basic information that they need to continue through the curriculum of the school. What is also happening is those students, I don't know about you guys, but when I was in college, you know, you had a test that taught you whatever that semester. These students are having to go back, these seniors, from ninth grade on to remember everything they've learned and be able to test on. So the teachers are spending a lot of time prepping them for these tests.
Thank you. Lynn Anderson.
Star, maybe there's an obvious answer to this. What do you think is the biggest weakness in the makeup of the board, other than, of course, you guys are not on it?
I think the biggest weakness is communication. I don't think they do a good enough job communicating with teachers, parents, staff, community. There has to be another way. I talked to a teacher today that says, you know, I learned for the first time, and I've been teaching for 5 years, the resources that are available to me as a teacher. And it's only because I have a mentor now who took me into the school district and showed me these things, and I never knew they existed. So we're not doing a good job of communicating what is available to the students, teachers, what's going on with our budget, what's available. We have to do a better job of communication.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted to ask, does the teachers union have too much influence or maybe even not enough over educational policy?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I can answer that question. I know that I did speak with a teacher today. I spent some time at one of our schools talking to different teachers and what was important to them. Negotiations are coming up. They do feel that maybe the union, and how do I put this, that the union may have more influence or more power than it needs to, but they'd like to see things, you know, they'd like to see things when the negotiations are going on, that it's not a bad guy, that you don't see the school district and the teachers fighting, that you see them working together as a team, and that's what we need to see in our media and reflected to our community.
Thank you very much. Lynn Anderson.
Returning a bit to the No Child Left Behind, sort of an offshoot, what basics should an Anchorage high school graduate have in their repertoire?
Well, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. I think, you know, you go back to the basics, and that's what they need, regardless of whether it's college, trade school, whatever. And I think you gear those academics for what that child's goal is, whether it's college, trade school, whatever. But you got to have the basics to be able to be successful.
Okay. If you had to take out the budget knife, where would you cut first and why?
I would probably look in administrative to start with. I don't know about how that is organized and what's going on there. I know that the one place I wouldn't cut is in the classrooms. Again, I talked to a teacher today. He's actually put $7,000 of his own pocket into things in the classroom. We've got teachers providing pencils, paper, things, standard supplies that they can't get. And
if I could follow up, is it because the district is slow to provide those things, or they're just never going to come?
They're never going to come. That's my understanding. They're never going to come, and I can't tell you how many teachers pull money out of their own pockets, and these are teachers who don't get paid enough to begin with.
Lane Anderson.
We've heard complaints about duplication of school services. We've watched commercials on the duplication of services between the district and the municipality. Is that a valid situation, or how do you approach?
You know, I don't know if it's valid or not. It's certainly an interesting commercial, and it provides for a lot of conversation, so I suppose that's a good thing. And hopefully it will pose some questions to individuals that are running that maybe we need to take a closer look at those things and see where we can merge some of those services.
Does the school district have programs or they may be classroom activities that you just say, we shouldn't be doing this, let's get rid of it?
There probably are. Some of the programs that they are doing that we don't do is creating successful students. We probably have that program in a handful of schools. And what that is taking students out of the classroom that can't be successful and moving them into a smaller classroom, maybe 10 or less with one-on-one. And it teaches them the skills to be successful in the classroom, keeps them in their own school, and when they're ready, moves them back into their classroom so that the teacher is not managing that behavioral. They're actually teaching the class.
Lynn Anderson.
Getting something like that, then, the special needs, your grandson, mm-hmm. I think. Do you think the school district is doing a good job of balancing, then, between time some students with special needs can spend in a regular classroom and then in their own environment, perhaps like you described, or because there is the risk of disturbance for the other students, too?
There is a risk of disturbance for the other students, and it is a fine line because as a parent of a special needs child, I would like to see my child mainstreamed into the school because you want them to be with other successful students. You need good role models. A lot of these children are followers, and they need a good role model to follow. So there has to be a way within the school district, and I'm working on that with Mount Eliamna now, trying to transition my grandson.
And I need to interrupt you. You have about 30 seconds for your closing.
Well, let me just tell you,
my thoughts.
We need to start education at preschool level. We need to offer creative, successful students in all elementary K through 6, a teacher's aide or volunteer in each classroom, offer more VOTEC opportunities, ensure that our teachers, staff, and students are safe in their environment, provide better communication, attract and retain quality teachers with pay raises and incentives. And my name is Star Marsat, and I'm running for school board seat B, and I'd appreciate your vote on April 7th. Thank you.
Thank you, Star Marsat. Mark Grober is another candidate in seat B. Mark, if you'd have your opening statement, please.
Thank you. My name's Mark Grober. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law in the state of Alaska for over 30 years. I've spent a good deal of time litigating education matters. Spent a good deal of time also testifying before committees of our legislature regarding education law. I'm an IT professional. I've been involved in computer labs in the school district, in government, private sector computers and technology. I'm an educator and a coach. I taught in our schools in this school district, post-secondary institutions. I've coached both at the high school and recreational levels. I'm a member of the community and a family member, a family man. My children have both graduated Anchorage School District. My wife is an employee of the school district, and I've volunteered extensively. I've been a budget review committee member for some 12 years and have continued to be involved in boards and what have you in the community.
Thank you, sir. Len Anderson.
As an attorney, and in your pursuit of educational opportunities for students at need under the federal law, you filed suit against several Alaska school districts, I understand, including ours, Anchorage School District. And you've taken strong stance in the past when you've examined the budget, I understand. What sort of relationship, given that, do you think you would have with the other members? Should you be sitting down amidst them?
Well, that is really an intriguing question, because one of my concerns is that what we so often see is that the board arrives, there's really no discussion, no major disagreement. They all seem to agree on the same position, and voila, we've adopted a policy. I think that the public really needs to see some discussion, some argument. They need to understand that these decisions that we're coming to have not been decided in smoke-filled rooms, that there's an ongoing public process. And they need to understand that the superintendent or the administration is not telling the board what to do. So I think I certainly don't hold any grudges, and I think it's I look forward to working with the other members of the board, but I think it's time for some real discussion.
Thank you, sir. My turn for a question. How do taxpayers know they're getting their money out of their school district, get money's worth?
The best instrumentality for that has always been the budget review process, and I've argued over these many years that the biggest problem with the budget review process is the superintendent, whoever it might be at the time, really is using that process to gain cover, because they're looking for an opportunity for the public to say, no, we can't touch that, and to say, yes, we want to keep everything in the budget. I've argued that we need to keep the budget review teams in place, because that's how you get more people familiar with the budget, that's how you get more people familiar with what really we do with the money, and that's how you get a sense throughout the community of where this money is being spent and whether you're getting anything for that money.
I'm going to follow up, and then we'll go to Lynn. In that case, if you were doing Carol Como's job review, the superintendent of the schools, what would you say in the job review?
I think somewhere that question was asked, and I give her a C-, and I know that's very much at odds with some in the community who are giving her A-pluses, and she's won national awards and what have you. But when I look at what so many people feel about being marginalized, not really being welcome in the community, having so much trouble figuring out what to do or how to get services, I am really concerned that what we really need to see is a greater connection with our populace, with the three major human resources, our parents, our students, and our labor.
Okay. Lynn Anderson.
Just exploring that, how would you outreach in now what is a multi-ethnic, multi-culture community?
Well, I think, number one, you have to make sure that everyone feels wanted, that they're not excluded, they're not marginalized, that they're welcome. I think we need, I keep coming back to one of the most important things we can do for our schools is we need to reduce the class size. We need to provide an opportunity where students feel welcome, they feel engaged, and we increase self-efficacy. We need to provide an opportunity for getting the parents of students who are not fluent in the English language to have an opportunity for them to be involved in that education. And we often talk about, well, there's adult literacy and we have schools for children, but I think when we look at the impact on our community, we really need to look at the population as a whole as far as literacy and communication.
Len, you want to give it another shot with another question?
Are the schools safe?
Are the schools safe? I've been in schools where people have been stabbed. So what does it mean, are the schools safe? I mean, are they free of the risk of being hurt? Certainly not. I'm sorry, that's not going to happen unless we have more self-efficacy, a better feeling among the students that there is an appropriate place to be and it's a safe place for them to be. And I think that while we have concerns about bullying and what have you, I think we have to address real concerns about violence before we start talking about bullying on the one hand. But when we're looking at children in the early grades, we really have to give them and help them understand the concept of respect for oneself and respect for everybody else.
Mr. Rober, you mentioned class size and desire to reduce class size. How do we do that without spending a whole lot of money?
Well, one of the things I've suggested is extending the school year, because we spend so much time and energy recapping. We call it regression recoupment. We spend the first quarter of every school year recapping what we did in the last quarter, and we're going around and around and around. We have a summer program, which I think is not as economical as it could be if we expanded it. But one of the concerns I have to suggest is that, as Steve Pratt was speaking of earlier, we're talking about making school mandatory, and yet my computations suggest that it would cost us close to $40 million by the time we got through all the costs that we would incur, not the $60 million fiscal note. And that, based on my calculations, is also about what it would cost us to reduce the class size to under 20 students. So if we're talking about having the money to force children who don't want to be there back into school, let's take that money, reduce the class size, and make it an enjoyable place where students want to come because they want to learn.
Thank you, sir. And now your closing statement.
This is very much appreciated. We've had a real problem in Anchorage because people are yawning about the school board election, and that's a real problem. We have three contested seats. We can make a real change, if you want change, in how the school board acts. But we're limited to 7 minutes. I want to invite people who are interested to look at all the candidates' websites. Mine's at grober.asdk12.info. I encourage everybody to do the research and to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grober. Now let's meet Richard Foster. 1 minute for your opening statement, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for this time. My name, again, is Richard Foster. I'm running for school board seat B. My vision, first of all, as the father of a daughter in kindergarten in this great public school system, is that all the parents become involved with their children, that we can facilitate the community and the parents together to help their child to get through this education, that the parents' society just doesn't drop their child off at the door of the school and say, here, educate my child, discipline my child, give them everything they need. That is the role. We are part of the family of this community, and I think we need to get back to assisting the parents in the education of their child.
Len Anderson.
When you say we, I assume you mean the school district, in a sense.
Yes.
And as the school board, what should they do then?
Well, I think there is a lot of communication. We have a lot of funding for special needs. 25% of our budget is actually dedicated to special needs. And unfortunately, not every parent is able to take off of work and be able to say, to spend all that time with their child. But we do need to somehow get that parent in with the child. We need to have more contacts with the parents. My mother was a teacher for 40 years in public school outside of Chicago, and her best time to help the students, to help her students, was to meet with the teachers and the parents, the former teachers, and to meet with the parents of those students. Because unless the parents understand what the curriculum is, what they're going to be learning in school, they aren't able to help their child. And so we need the parents voluntarily come in the evening. Teachers are very dedicated. The funding, the cost that they give to the classroom, I don't think that's an exception for parents, for teachers to give that much money. I think most teachers give more and above than what they have.
It occurs to me you grew up around education and have some perspective on it. You also have perspective as you were a student once, as we all were.
Yes.
In your own education in the school district you were in, elementary and secondary, did you ever have a sense as a student and in retrospect that there was just something they were doing wrong that they shouldn't have been doing?
Well, I grew up outside of Chicago, and I graduated from a high school of 4,200 students. A large school is created a lot of a variety of opportunity. I can still remember the names of pretty much all, maybe one teacher that I had growing up in 12 years of public education. I can remember all the teachers' names. Those were the impact that they gave me. We had teachers that throughout their syllabus, their plans, because the classes were so far ahead of what they were teaching that they decided to set it aside, okay, we're going to teach this. And that's what we need to be able to do. We need to be able to allow the teachers to not be so encumbered by this paperwork. They shouldn't have to justify, take 60% of their time to justify why they're going beyond this certain scope or why they're teaching this over here or why they're teaching that. It takes so much work for them to fill out that paperwork. It's just unbelievable. And I think that's what we see now.
Thank you. Len Anderson.
A rather common community comment one encounters concerns student numbers versus cost. They like to say, well, student numbers in Anchorage have dropped and the cost is going up. Some would say that's financial irresponsibility or too much fat. Others say, well, the school environment has changed and what the district is expected to do. Any idea where the truth might lie?
Well, some of that's difficult because we live in a very unique community up here. Between the diversity that we have and the programs that we have here, based upon an average city that has the same type of students, same number of students, we are actually with our budget right in line. Our operating budget is about $600 million. The $780 million includes the capital expenditures. The $600 to $700 million, we're actually right in line with schools such as Seattle, Portland. We actually spend a little bit more than Chicago, Spokane. And so by bringing that up, we see our taxes going toward the school and the education system, but yet we have students on a student cost basis. We're actually in line. Now, whether we're getting the best bang for our buck, I don't know, because we have such a diversity. None of those other communities, we actually have more options, more charter schools, more optional schools and programs than any other of those programs, those cities out there. So we have more variety. We have more funding that's needed for those programs. If we are going to have the education, ESL, we have $16 million just for ESL for students in our district.
Okay, thank you. I'm Michael Carey, your host. I'm here with Len Anderson of KSK, the Metro Reporter, and we are interviewing the candidates for school board seat B. We're about halfway through the candidates in this particular race. And I wanted to ask Mr. Foster, are we having trouble recruiting the teachers we need here, the new teachers we need, and if so, why?
I think we are, partly because of our location, but we aren't known too much as a well-paying state, and we've gone to this defined contributions as opposed to a defined benefit structure, and that's hard on the teachers because they've given so much of their time, so much of their effort to the community, that to say, well, you may or may not have this money when you retire, or how much money, we don't know. We're just going to put it up front, and I think what needs to happen is that we go back to a defined benefits so that teachers know that they can retire and that the community can take care of them.
Len Anderson.
Sticking with the teachers, does the union have too much influence?
I'm not sure. Influence, maybe in the negotiations with salaries, sometimes they can get aggravating. And I think there is a problem with a contentious nature between the union setting up a stance and everybody giving their offers and said. The unions are just made up of the teachers and the administrator, the people that they want in the union. So it's not, we don't have a separate staff that's running the union that's telling the teachers what to do. The teachers need to be involved with the union. If they feel that they have too much influence, then teachers need to be able to say, you know, this is what we want. And I believe on the board, I would like to see a teachers advisory committee be able to go into the board to have a representative, and not a union representative necessarily, but a teacher representative to the board to find out what the problem is.
We're going to run out of time here, so your closing statement, please.
Thank you for the opportunity. I am, first of all, the father of a kindergartner in this school. But second of all, I do look at numbers. My career is based on looking at numbers, trying to figure out the best use of the taxpayers' money. And given the chance, I would like to be able to represent the taxpayers on the board to be able to say that this money is where we need to place our best education together. So again, I'm Richard Foster. I appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Okay, we'll be right back with more candidates for Seat B.